Hi everyone, welcome back to the 21 and Sensory podcast with me, Emily. On today's episode, I have the lovely Ashley Thompson. Ashley is 24 and works full-time as a project manager. Ashley is autistic and lives with her boyfriend Charlie, who is also autistic. Now, you might know Ashley from her fab TikTok videos. She's at Ashley Fair, where she has over 35,000 followers. And she also has a blog where she talks a lot about her experiences realizing she is autistic and also just gives lots of helpful advice. So I will link Ashley's TikTok and blog, etc., in the show notes. But yeah, Ashley, would you like to say hello?
Hi, thank you for having me on. I'm so excited to be on a podcast. This is a personal dream of mine.
Oh, bless you. Well, it means a lot that you, you're up for chatting to me. And yeah, I have followed you on Instagram, I think a bit longer than I have on TikTok. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to chat to you and chat about kind of your journey with things. So maybe we could, I like to start with diagnosis. It always kind of leads to lots more interesting questions. Yeah, do you want to kind of discuss any diagnoses you have and how you kind of got them?
Yeah, sure. I think my diagnosis story is a little bit of a weird one as far as my autism diagnosis. So I didn't realize myself that I was autistic. In fact, I had no clue until I was about 17. I had struggled a lot throughout, especially my teenage years. I struggled a lot just feeling kind of weird and like I didn't really fit in. I had a lot of issues kind of keeping friendships, and I kind of just thought I was a really bad person because I was just thinking, why don't I understand other people very well? And I just couldn't work it out. And then when I was about 17, my mum actually was doing some volunteering for this program called Home Start, where you kind of volunteers go in and they help out vulnerable families. And the family that she was placed with had two autistic kids. So she had to go on a training course about autism. And on that course, they kind of like had the whole morning session. And this woman was talking through kind of traits of autistic children and, you know, signs to look for. And my mum kept putting her hand up the whole morning saying, oh, but my daughter does that. Isn't that a thing that everybody has? And like, oh, and my daughter does that actually. So it happened so many times that the woman giving the talk had to pull her over at lunchtime and say, I think your daughter might be autistic. So we had no idea. But I guess something that was quite disappointing from that situation is when the woman sort of talked to my mum, she said, you know, is she doing well in school? And academically, I was doing great. But in terms of my mental health, it was really suffering. But I kind of was so good at keeping them separate. But obviously, this woman just was like, well, if she's doing well academically, there's no real, there may not be a need for her to get a diagnosis. So I know. So my mum came home and explained it all to me. And at first I thought she was joking. Because I had in my head all of the stereotypes that people think about. And I just was like, well, that doesn't seem like me. But then we researched how it is in girls and women. And the more that we looked into it, it was like, the only way I can describe it is there was all these weird little quirks about me. And for example, you wouldn't have connected the fact that I struggled with friendships to the fact that when I'm excited, I do this little tick where I kind of itch my nose. Like normally you wouldn't connect those two things, but suddenly it was like, no, there is a connection and it all is linking together. But as she said, I kind of just thought, well, okay, maybe I don't need a diagnosis based on what that woman said. So I continued like a few years, I started uni and things like that. And I continued for a bit just thinking, okay, I know that I probably am autistic, but I didn't really feel valid enough to tell people because I didn't know how big of a thing self-diagnosis is as it is now. So I didn't really feel valid mentioning it. I mentioned it to a couple of people, but I kind of passed it off like as a joke, kind of like, yeah, I think I might be autistic. And then it wasn't until, I think many people had this experience in the pandemic, everything was just kind of a massive shock. And for me, the change in routine was really, really hard. And I just was having regular, really bad meltdowns and things like that. And I just thought, this can't really be normal. And I started back at therapy again. I had seen by that point about four or five different therapists. Because nothing really was working. I didn't fully understand how to get better. And I kind of mentioned to her, I think I might be autistic, but I don't know if it makes a difference in terms of my therapy. And she said, yeah, no, it absolutely would make a difference in how we approach your therapy. And I think it's worth looking into. So by that point, obviously, I'd had years of struggling with my mental health. And I kind of sat down with my parents and I talked to them about it. And I said, look, my therapist thinks that it's worth me getting a diagnosis. We've known all this time that I probably am autistic. But at the time, I was just struggling so much. I was just thinking, I don't know if I can deal with this like really long wait list. And so it was kind of the choice between, okay, I need to see a therapist as soon as possible. But do I continue with the same one who's not fully understanding me? Or do I go on the long way and not know? And it was just this really in between. So I was really lucky because we did some research and we found somewhere like private that wasn't too expensive. So I went with that and then I managed to actually get my diagnosis pretty quickly, which I know is a huge privilege, but it kind of just felt sort of necessary with what was going on at the time. So yeah, and then here I am, I guess.
So am I right in thinking you were diagnosed, was it 2021?
Yes, it was. It was just at the start in January, I think.
Okay, so how old would you have been?
I was just turned 22 then, and I'm just turned 24 now.
Right, okay. So were you at uni, like, when you found out kind of thing?
Yes, yeah. I was literally kind of like, I think, midway through my final year of uni, which is a really inconvenient... It's a really crazy time to realise that you're autistic.
Exactly. Like, did you tell the uni? Like, what? I mean, you were coming towards the end. Like, frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, I did actually. And I found, so that was kind of an interesting one in how the university dealt with it. I found, firstly, the disability team at my university was incredible. I cannot fault them because there's a woman that works there, Sarah, and she literally saved my life in that she knows. She's one of those people that really just knows everything and she's really understanding. She has so much experience and she was meant to just basically have an initial meeting with me and explain, like help me process my diagnosis and like kind of offer the support. But especially initially, I was really still struggling a lot. And so she actually just set up weekly meetings with me where we would just kind of talk and she would help me unpack things.
Okay.
And having that, especially at the start of the diagnosis, was so helpful because there were so many things that I just thought, okay, I don't understand where this is coming from. Mm-hmm. And she was great for that. But then I suppose, yeah, so that was a great experience. I did also do like a semester of a master's at the same university, but that was a very different experience in terms of accommodations. Like I think the course had a different department and how they handled it was definitely not as positive.
That's wild how much it, like, you know, it's the same university but like the accommodations can change or like fluctuate between like how receptive a department is wild.
Absolutely. I think it has more to do with actually people's own individual judgments of like autistic people. So, I mean, for example, I had a really awful meeting with two of the course leaders for that master's course, and one of them was like, oh, well, you don't seem autistic to me. I never would have guessed. And as soon as he said that, I was like, okay, I know I'm not going to get any, like, you're not going to get any understanding here.
Yeah. I almost wanted you to ask him what he was expecting.
That's the thing. And also the thing is, I sort of, that's where I explained to them the significance of like masking, because I said, like, because of how heavily I mask, you will never see me like physically struggle in front of you. Because I have always like massively internalized that and kind of hidden it. So but it's really hard to explain to somebody the amount of distress that you can experience behind closed doors when you mask, and then you can seem perfectly fine face to face.
Yeah. And they don't realize that actually you go home and you know, potentially are really burnt out or have like a meltdown because you have been holding it together just about all day.
Exactly.
And then you just fall apart when you get home.
Exactly. That was definitely an experience in school, I think. Like, my mum and my brother used to dread picking me up from school because nobody knew at the time, but I was obviously working so hard masking all through the day that when I came home, I would just be so like short, so moody, and just like having meltdowns almost every day because I was just tired.
Yeah.
Pretty just much
like, tired on, you know, a normal school day level, but also, you know, undiagnosed autism.
Absolutely.
And
yes,
just, oh, the sensoriness of a secondary school is terrifying.
it was way too much, and I probably wasn't even fully processing it to the level that I would now. If I went into a school now, it probably would be even worse.
But it just annoys me how much, like, you saying that, you know, academically you were doing really well, and like, I kind of felt that as well. Like, I struggled academically, but I was well behaved. And
yes,
if you're well behaved or or are doing, you know, fine in classes, that's how we're just going under the radar, and it's so frustrating.
That's the thing. And I think it's really sad in a way, but I think from a very young age, I learned to kind of put on this front of seeming like everything's okay. Yeah. And basically just, I think this is a really common experience with a lot of late diagnosed autistics, especially, it's the people pleasing. Like, you learn so early on, okay, I have to seem okay to everyone else because I don't want to be a burden on them. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like all through school, I would just be having breakdowns at home, and my mum would go into my teachers and say, this is what's happening at home. Like, she's crying every day. She's having these horrible, I mean, she didn't know what was going on with the meltdowns, but it was just horrific every single day. And she would speak to my teachers about this and say, you know, just so you're aware, if anything happens. And they were like, we never would have guessed, because in school she is so well, she's so like happy and bubbly and she's really hardworking. But it was just me trying so hard to make sure that no one saw that.
Yeah. And you feel like you have to be that person at school, like, you want to fit in, you want to do well, like, and you're right, it's like putting on an act every day, which is amazing when, you know, teachers are like, really, like, they're like this at home.
That's the thing. I could have really gone on to be a great actress if I wanted to, because I was really putting on the performance of a lifetime.
And do you think, like, since finding this out about yourself, do you think like you're able to drop the mask a bit, like, since your diagnosis, or do you still find it quite, like, for me, I find it almost hard to know when I am masking because it's just kind of built into me. Like, how do you find it now?
Oh, do you know what? It is really hard, because people ask me this a lot on TikTok as well, and I think it is really hard to know, because it's so, especially if you're used to heavily masking, it's so ingrained in you that it's almost, it's easier to mask than it is to unmask. And the weird thing is, when I was first learning to unmask, mostly it was just from spending time around other autistic people, but I actually felt more vulnerable unmasking than I do when I mask, because for me it feels just like it's a protective layer, and if I let that go, then everyone can see the real me, and that's kind of scary. But I think what's been easier for me is really just finding other autistic people to be around. Like, and it's kind of happened by accident. I think I got my diagnosis, I started trying to be more myself, and like I went into it with the goal of, okay, masking has clearly been causing me a lot of stress. I'm going to try and stop that. And it was kind of like my boyfriend, I was dating him at the time, but he had already thought that he was autistic. And I was like, yeah, you absolutely are.
Amazing.
I was like, yeah, you are. And he got his diagnosis shortly after as well, off the back of that. And then I met my best friend, like my now best friend, like it was maybe, I don't know, about 9 or 10 months after I got my diagnosis. And she actually, it was so weird. So we met at this volunteering program for the university, and she was kind of leading this talk, and I was watching her. I was thinking, she's autistic, because you start to notice it in everyone.
You start to
get a radar. So I was just thinking, she's autistic, like I can see that she's stimming and stuff, and I wonder if she knows. But I was thinking, well, I can't really just go up to someone and say, hi, you're autistic, because you don't know how they're going to take that. But she actually had found my TikTok already. And she was like, oh, I've seen your videos. Do you think I could be autistic? I'm thinking of looking into it. And I was like, yeah, you are. Like, I really, I didn't want to say anything, but you are. So it was kind of weird. It was just, I think being around other autistic people helps you to unmask, because you realize there's no point in either of us masking, because it's not doing any of us any help. But at the same time, it's weird, because the more you unmask, the more you find other autistic people. So it's actually a great way of making friends. But yeah, no, I completely would say it is really difficult, and I don't think I'm fully there yet. I think it's just something that kind of happens as I get more comfortable with somebody. That's when, and I notice, for example, that I'm stimming more when I'm talking to them, or I'm making less eye contact. That's when I know, okay, we're in the sweet spot of, like, I feel comfortable to unmask around you.
Oh, that's nice. And you kind of mentioned a bit about, like, people finding you through your TikTok videos. Like, how did you start that? Like, when, what was the kind of gap between diagnosis and kind of putting yourself out there online, or was it quite a quick thing?
I think my TikTok was kind of like it's always been kind of like a slow burn, in the sense that I just kind of go through periods where I'm super enthusiastic about it, and then periods where it kind of burns me out a bit. But I found that I got my diagnosis, and then I think very soon afterwards, I just was doing more research on TikTok, really, because that's the first place I think I saw like Paige Lale's videos. And that was around the time I was thinking of getting a diagnosis. And again, it was just that extra validation of like, oh, she seems like me and she's autistic. And so I just started doing more research and finding more creators on TikTok who were autistic. And I thought, oh, this is great. And I want to share my experiences and kind of see a lot of it in the beginning. I think with my videos, I can see that it was kind of more just me asking if anyone else experienced stuff.
Is there anyone out there?
Most of them are like, is this just me? Because I wanted to just, I guess, there's so many things that you kind of have to unpack and be like, okay, is this an autism thing? Is this just a me thing? Most of it turns out is an autism thing. But yeah, so I just kind of wanted to know more about it. And then I think I just had a few that kind of blew up. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with this many people. This is crazy. But I think definitely seeing like some really nice comments just about how it helps people. And the ones that really get me are people who are parents of autistic kids, and they're maybe autistic themselves, and they're just like, I'm trying to learn more, so it's really great to hear from you. That's really what motivated me to kind of keep going with it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And it must be nice as well to kind of almost like get this feedback and see that other people are realizing kind of through their children as well that they might, you know, be autistic and are trying to not only help themselves but help their children at the same time. That must be quite a nice like feeling to be like, oh, you know, your content is helping people of like different, you know, walks of life.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think it is funny when you have those people who are like, oh, my kid's autistic and now I think I might be, because nine times out of 10 it always happens, because it's obviously genetic, so it's kind of like it's come from somewhere. And even up till recently I thought my mum was fully like neurotypical. My dad's definitely the autistic one, but I thought she was fully neurotypical, but then now I'm like, oh no, she definitely has ADHD. And I've been like, that's been my next thing, is maybe looking into whether I need to get diagnosed for that. But I don't feel as much of a pressure because I kind of understand myself better now anyway. But the fact that I just was thinking about it and then my mum was like, yeah, I have this thing where I feel like I really need to rush my thoughts out before I forget them. And I was like, oh, mum, you do realise I have something to tell you.
Yeah, like almost like she told you about you being autistic. You need to tell her.
Exactly. We're diagnosing each other.
Oh, bless. I think it's really interesting how like you said earlier, like you could almost get like a radar for like other people, and you kind of almost are like, I don't want to say, but I do want to say. And then you're like, how would I make a friend? Like, how would I approach someone? And it's like the kind of whole autism thing goes full circle. You're like, I want to pass it on.
That's the thing. I feel it's actually crazy though, because I feel like most times I haven't actually had to tell people, because the people that I sense it with, once they realize like, oh, that I'm open about the fact that I'm autistic, nine times out of 10, they just come up to me and they're like, hey, I've been kind of thinking about this. And always I'm just like, yeah, you are. Like, don't worry. I already sensed it. And it's the relief in their faces where they're like, oh, I feel validated. Like, somebody gets it. And that's really nice to see. It's so good when you find somebody who just understands it and validates what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. And kind of leading off that, like, I'd be interested to know, like, after university, how did you find like the world of employment, and like, have you told people that you work with, have you not? Because this is something that I've also struggled with, like, it's hard in a professional setting, let alone in a personal, like, you know, just making friends and on like uni courses and stuff. So how have you found like that side of it?
I definitely have found it hard in terms of work, for a number of things. So I did tell the people at my current job that I'm autistic. But first of all, I was so nervous, and it was really conflicting, because I feel like a lot of it was partially kind of my own internalized ableism, because I was thinking, oh my God, I don't want them to judge me. I don't want them to think like I'm not capable of doing my job. Yeah. And I don't want them to just like, you know, because people have this idea of this, of all the stereotypes, and it's usually based on like autistic men and boys. And that's not me, in the sense that, like, I guess, particularly in autistic boys, it presents more sometimes in an antisocial way, not all the time. But in my case, I'm very social. I love to talk to people. And what I don't want is for somebody to hear that I'm autistic and immediately kind of be like, okay, well, she doesn't want to talk then, which is not the case. So I was really nervous to tell them, but they kind of just were like, okay, that's fine. But what I find most challenging is feeling sort of brave enough to ask for accommodations. So initially I didn't really ask for any at all. I just basically said, oh, I like clear instructions and that kind of thing. But particularly as a job progressed, especially more recently, it's been really busy, and I was just getting incredibly overwhelmed. I was having more and more meltdowns, and that was where I had to step in and set a boundary and say, okay, the amount of work, like this workload that you're putting on me, I feel this pressure to complete it because I'm such a perfectionist. And if you tell me to do something, my autistic brain is like, okay, I need to do it to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
So I was just basically completely burning myself out an insane amount trying to keep up with everything. Mm-hmm. And that was where I had to step in and say, no, this is a boundary. But I do think I think work environments still have a lot of companies still have a long way to go in terms of fully understanding accommodations, because mm-hmm. I think they'll say, yeah, sure, like I can give you clear instructions, I can give you clear expectations, you know, let us know if you're struggling anytime. But then 9 times out of 10, they'll go back on their word. And that's the challenging part, because it's not what autistic people need to understand is that is not your fault or your problem. Like if you have a boundary and an accommodation that you need, then you need to just keep reminding them, hey, this is what I've set for myself, this is what I'm doing. And but it's hard because, you know, they need to meet you halfway, really.
You don't want to seem like a nuisance, but also you are entitled to like this accommodation, you know.
So it's tricky. Yeah. It feels like you're negotiating, but your mental health and well-being is at stake.
That's a good way of putting it.
I've definitely found it tricky, but I think I'm coming out the other side of a difficult time now, and I think it has really helped me to set the boundaries. Something that my boyfriend Charlie actually said to me one time when I was in many of the meltdowns that I had was, if you allow them to treat you like this, if you allow people to, you know, not accommodate you or cross your boundaries, all you're saying to yourself is that you don't matter as much, and that your feelings and your well-being it comes below them. And every time that you do that, you're kind of pushing yourself further and further down. And that's that is what feels the worst, because you're not doing right by yourself and you kind of know it. So I think that's why it's important to set those boundaries and ask for the accommodations.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, having a supporting partner who's like got your corner as well is always helpful.
That always helps.
When you go home, like, oh, it's good to bounce ideas.
Absolutely. I think especially us both being autistic, it's kind of funny in that we sort of play this fun tennis game of like who is the most burnt out and then who can offer support. So we kind of like, sometimes when he's burnt out, it's like my turn to take over and be the support, and then vice versa. Although I seem to have a lot more meltdowns than he does, so
I'm sure he wouldn't say that, and that he's very very up for looking after you. But it's nice that you're there for each other, and also that like you both like get each other, like not just relationship wise but also like neurologically.
Yes.
Like, it must be nice to almost like, you know, obviously everyone is very different if they're like autistic, but it must be nice to kind of be on the same page with a lot of things.
Yes, no, absolutely. I think like I've had relationships in the past where it just felt like they didn't fully understand me, or it felt like, for me, a massive thing with friendships and relationships is I had a lot of people who just made me feel like I was a burden, and I was really hard work to be around, and it really kind of crushed me in a way, because I obviously don't want to do that to people. But I think since being with Charlie, I think that's a really important thing that he's taught me, is like I'm not a burden, and basically I just have like I have some extra needs in some case, like, you know, everybody has different things that they'll bring into the relationship, different difficulties, and he kind of gets them because he's also autistic. And it's great to be able to just, you know, we can say to each other, okay, I'm feeling burnt out, I just need some quiet time, and we both just get it. So that has made things so much easier in that sense.
But I just think it's almost unfair on us that we kind of have to go through these potentially not very nice experiences to work out that, oh, actually, like, I am worthy, like, like, you know, I do deserve, like, you know, friendship or like a relationship, and I do deserve to be like treated with respect and not have to change, or, you know, even just like put on an act for like someone, like, you deserve to be able to be yourself. But the fact that we, you know, no one teaches you these things.
no. And I think something that people don't talk about enough either as well is, I think, especially when you're undiagnosed autistic, it's kind of like there's almost this like vulnerability about you, in the sense that you are struggling, but you don't know what's going on. And I think a lot of the times that actually you can fall prey to the wrong kinds of people. Like, there are people who will manipulate you, and, you know, it's horrible, but they kind of like, I think this is an experience I've heard a lot of other autistic people talk about. It's kind of just, you definitely fall prey to people who want to use you in some way, or they'll just kind of put you down or things like that. Yeah. Like, I think it's quite a common experience. And because we're so, I think many of us are so blindly trusting in the people that we care about. And that really can lead us into a lot of bad situations. And yeah, like you said, I think it's really horrible that for many of us, we have to go through those horrible friendships or relationships where we just don't feel valued, or, you know, we can be taken advantage of. And it's not until after, when you kind of realize, okay, that's what was going on, that you can start to not blame yourself.
And I feel like also, like, you hear and are potentially more educated on things that are like more physical, like manipulation, rather than like emotional manipulation. And I think that's where we as autistic people are really like vulnerable, because you're just not aware and you're just not taught that actually that emotional manipulation is a thing, and you know, that you need to be, just need to be like wary. But like you say, like we're just so trusting and kind and get taken advantage of.
That's the thing, you don't realize with when it's emotional. And I had an experience with a friendship like that while I was at university, and it was definitely one of the hardest things I had to go through, because this was a close friend, and I had told them, oh, I think I might be autistic. And I told them because I was so afraid with friends of saying or doing the wrong thing, because I'm autistic and I don't understand, and hurting them. So I said, you know, if I say anything that, you know, maybe offensive, like, I promise I don't mean it, just explain to me like what I did wrong. I'll always be sorry. Like, I just don't want you to be offended by anything. And I think that definitely, that was a person where I didn't realize that I probably shouldn't fully trust them in that sense. And it kind of, it reached a point where they kind of would make me run everything by them in the friendship. So it was like, you know, I'm thinking of texting this other friend to ask them, and they were like, okay, you should say this, you should say that. And it became almost like it was too like controlling. But I took it as, oh, they're just trying to help me. Like, they're trying to teach me how to socialize properly. And once I got out of that situation, I still found it really hard to trust my own judgment for things for months, because I just thought, okay, I'm doing everything wrong. And, you know, I don't know how to talk to people, and I'm a really bad person. But that's an example which a lot of autistic people can fall into, where it wasn't my fault looking back, but you know, it's somebody coming in and they can see that you don't really know yourself, so they're able to control that. So that's something I think we all have to be a bit wary of.
And it's hard to not just be like wrapped up in the fact that, like, you're just thankful that you have a friend and like someone who wants to, you know, talk to you like regularly. And, you know, they're not annoyed by you, and it's like, oh, great, I have a friend. But yeah, you're right. It's hard not to get like wrapped up in that and actually have, you know, take a step back and be like, you know, is this a healthy you know, friendship kind of thing? But
for sure.
Yeah, it's tricky unless you've gone gone through it, or you know other people who have gone through it and know what to look for almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really interesting to like chat about it because I do feel like, you know, it is like important to have friends, but it's so hard to work people out.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's what makes it easier if you can find good autistic friends, because now it's like with one of my best friends, Heather, I can literally, I just know, like I'm really into our friendship and she's really into the friendship too. And it's just, it's kind of just easy in that sense because you understand each other and you can talk about your special interests together. And it just makes it easier when somebody like fully understands you on that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. Like I was chatting to a couple of people the other day who are both autistic, and like one of them was just like, because you know, just autism things, and we like the other two of us were just like nodding like, yeah, we get that, yeah. It's like just autism is just like, you know, the kind of like way to explain things, like just explain this whole story. And she was like, yeah, just autism. And we were like,
yeah. I think I was talking the other day, I was saying what I feel grateful with my friend Heather, my boyfriend Charlie, is like, for example, if we do a day out somewhere, so if I do a day out in London, like doing loads of stuff, I obviously get really burnt out because it's really loud and busy, and so do they. But it's great because if I've gone on a day out with like a neurotypical, I would feel pressured to like still talk to them on the train and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But it was great because anytime I've gone on a day out with like other autistic people, I have just kind of like vegged out on the train back. Like we'll both just like put our headphones in, not say anything, and just kind of decompress. And that is so nice, just to be able to, you know that, okay, this is what's going on. And like with Heather, I think we got like halfway through the day, was getting to lunchtime, and I was watching her get quieter and quieter, and I was just saying, yeah, you're getting burnt out, you need some food. So yeah, being able to like just not have that pressure is so good.
And like just also the fact that you're recognizing it in others, like, oh, I know that.
Yeah.
I know that feeling.
Exactly. It's just, there's no need to explain, you just get it.
And also like finding those people in your life that like you can like sit and read a book with, or like enjoy each other's company but in silence, like those people are so hard to find, but they're so great.
I know, that's the thing, is me and Charlie do that a lot with like body doubling, where we'll each do our own thing, and it used to make me laugh because in previous relationships it's like I had like an ex who was just like, oh, do you mind if I go and play video games with my friends? And I was like, please do, like.
Yeah.
I never understood the whole like, I don't want my boyfriend to be playing video games. And I will very happily just sit in the same room as you reading a book. For me, that's quality time. Like,
and like, almost like you need that space sometimes.
Yeah,
like
totally. Yeah. Like just doing your own thing in the same space is 100% an autistic love language.
Yeah. Absolutely. You can just both be happy both doing your own thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it is totally necessary because it's just, there's no effort required. It's great.
And how do you find, like, so all the things we've kind of talked about, like obviously you have a job, have you know, friends and a boyfriend, and like obviously doing all the like digital like content stuff as well with all the videos and things, like, are you someone that kind of likes a routine or like a structure? Like, how do you balance all these things?
Yeah, it's definitely quite hard. I think I'm still trying to figure out how to actually manage my life, really, to be honest. I think the autism side of my brain definitely needs a routine. But then on the other hand, I think the undiagnosed ADHD is like, okay, well, I don't want to follow a routine. So like it's hard because I'll put a routine in place. I'm like, yep, this is what I'm going to do. And it lasts a little bit. And then my brain's like, yeah, I'm bored, let's mix it up. So I guess really the main thing that I find works for me, which I'm still working on, is just increasing like my self-awareness. I think being aware of my own needs is not something that I was in the practice of doing, because I think masking for so long growing up, that's all about basically just suppressing how you're feeling and not really being aware of how you're feeling. But I think nowadays I try to be much more just in touch with my brain and my body and just kind of know, try to work out how I'm feeling. I think I definitely think I may have that kind of overlapping thing with autism, alexithymia, where you can't really identify your emotions. So that makes it a challenge. But for example, I have a really good system with Charlie where he'll say, how are you feeling on a scale of 1 to 10? And having that check-in every so often is really good, just to be like, okay, because once I think about the number, I'm thinking, okay, I'm sort of mentally at a 9, but I'm physically at like a 4 because I'm really tired or things like that. So I think that's what I'm trying to, that's how I'm basically trying to learn to cope with, especially when things are busier, is just basically checking in with myself. And I think I'm just, I sort of, even my approach is different. And I think that helps, because when I was younger, I'd obviously have things like meltdowns and burnout, but I'd just be thinking, what is wrong with me? Like, why can't I pull it together? Like, why can't I do what everyone else is doing? I don't understand. Whereas now my approach is like, okay, well, I feel really exhausted today. I'm probably starting burnout. So I'm just going to allow myself to be in bed this morning and wear comfy clothes and just chill and regain some energy. And even just having, it's sort of like approaching yourself as you would a friend, and just being more compassionate and thinking, okay, why could I be feeling like this and what would help me? And that's definitely what's helped me going forward, more so than even routines and stuff, actually. Just checking in with myself, I'd say, has been the biggest help.
Mm-hmm. And do you find, like, since your diagnosis, like, just knowing you're autistic, do you feel like you're kinder to yourself and like you cut yourself some more kind of slack because you kind of know the reason? Because that's kind of how I've sort of found it, where I'm just like, God, I just need to cut myself some slack. Like, I'm dealing with a lot and I know what it is.
Yeah, that's the thing. I would describe the day that I got my diagnosis as by far the best day of my life. And some people find that hilarious, but other autistic people get it, I think, because it was just, I can only describe it as this huge weight being lifted off my shoulders, because before that day, I had gone, 22 years of my life just feeling like I'm a terrible person, I'm a burden, I've got all this weird stuff about me that like nobody else seems to understand, and I have no idea why I do it. Like, why am I so sensitive? Why do I break down so easily? And then it was kind of just this, I just had this like switch flip in my mind where I realized after I got diagnosed, literally that evening, I just thought, you know what? This isn't my problem anymore. Like, I've spent 22 years like trying to learn about other people and trying to like analyze their behavior and like, okay, should I say this? Should I do this? And like questioning myself. And I just realized I've got a legitimate reason why I don't have to do that anymore. And in fact, they should start trying to learn how to understand me.
So, why is it always on us?
Exactly. Like, after that, I was like, I have no worries. Like, I'm just going to start saying to people, I'm autistic, so that's why I don't get it. And if you have a problem with that, I don't know, leave. So it was just this huge weight off of my shoulders, because I realized, okay, I'm not a bad person. I just don't understand some things because I'm autistic, and you know, people just need to learn how to get that, I guess.
And people just don't realize that, like you were saying, like kind of analyzing other people's like behavior and, you know, even things like facial expressions and stuff like that, like you almost don't realize there's this like constant inner like monologue going on in like where it's kind of throwing you suggestions of how you might survive in this environment, where actually, like, it shouldn't all be on us. Like, can someone else take the slack off us? And like,
It's literally never end. And that's definitely been another part of unmasking, is like, I had that realization, but then it's still trying to undo those habits of just overthinking every single thing. And I've actually got better at it in the work sense, because when I first, I send so many emails a day, but when I first was working, I had to read back every email about 3 or 4 times and check that I seemed friendly enough. Now I just don't care. I'm just like, you know what? If the information's clear and it gets the point across, I don't care if I'm like really, really nicey. Like, I'm just going to, I'm just going to say what I'm thinking in the email, and, you know, I'll be polite, but I'm not putting... Yeah,
tone is so weird.
Yes, I know. And it's just, like, I think I used to just come off as... I probably came off, to be honest, as a bit like Uncanny Valley. I think because any interaction I had, I probably was just trying so hard to be overly friendly that everyone was thinking, can she chill out a bit? Like, so I think actually putting less effort in has, in a way, made me seem like more normal.
I see. It's hard though, because you're like, where do I pitch it? Like, I want to seem enthusiastic and I want to seem like, you know, professional, but then you're also like almost monitoring everything you do and say, and that's a lot in itself.
And I still have moments where I'm just like, I'll feel like, yes, I really nailed that, but then there'll be some moment of the interaction that I think about afterwards and I'm just like physically cringing, because I look back and I'm like, why did I say that? Why did I do it? Why did I do that thing? And I'll just say, I'm definitely one of those people that would just stay awake at night just thinking about all
just lying there like, oh, why did I do this?
Oh god. I'm so bad for that, but I feel it's just that old masking tendency of just like, I need to get an A star at socializing, and it's just like, it's fine, you really don't have to, it's okay.
Yeah, and I always try and think like, I'm probably the only person thinking, like rethinking this over, like the other person's moved on with their life and I wish I was them, but
oh yes,
like, so annoying.
Literally everyone around me, like my parents, my friends, Charlie, they're always telling me that, like, nobody else is thinking about this as much as you are.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's just my brain, it's just how it is.
Yeah, and that's the thing, I don't analyze other people's interactions. Like, I don't think, oh my gosh, that's so embarrassing that they just did that, but for some reason my brain doesn't get that, like, the same rule applies to me.
Yeah, what is with that?
I don't know. I wish I could send my brain a message, just relax a bit.
Yeah, that would be great. And I wanted to ask you about I like to ask all my guests about, like, their hobbies and special interests.
Sure.
I'd be very keen to chat about all things Right Move, pyramid schemes, other things I've seen on your TikTok where you're like, is it just me? And I'm with you on the Right Move thing. Pyramid schemes, I'm keen to learn more about, but Right Move, I am, and Zoopla, I'm obsessed with.
Yes. See, I think my special interests are a bit weird in the sense that I don't think I have as many, like, ongoing, like, really intense ones. I think the way my special interest manifests is maybe more the ADHD side of, like, hyperfixating on things, because like, for example, the other autistic people around me, I see that their special interests last at least months, if not years. And I have a few that I will kind of circle back to, like, broad areas, like beauty or, like, hair stuff or whatever, or fashion. But I think most of the time I just have these, like, weird hyperfixations that last for a few months and then I move on to something else. So yeah, Right Move is definitely my one that's been going on for, like, a few months, but I literally have the app and I check Right Move the way that people check Instagram, like,
amazing.
If I'm bored, I just scroll Right Move, but it's great because I'll just be, I don't know, I just love watching, like, okay, this is what the prices are doing, what's going on in this area, like,
and the stats.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But when I try to explain it to people, I just sound crazy because they're just like, this is not interesting at all, like, why are you talking to me?
Oh,
about?
You've come to the right place on my podcast. this is where we love all things you know, random special interest.
With the pyramid schemes as well, that was one for, like, a few months, and it's just kind of one of those things where I know it's happening because it'll be like 2 a.m. and I'm watching multiple YouTube videos or like researching something. And I'm like, oh no,
amazing,
it's starting again. But it's wow. but it's, yeah, that's the thing. If it's so, other people I feel have like sort of more convenient special interests because they last longer and they're more on like accessible topics. Like Charlie's are like, yeah, Lego and plants and that kind of thing. Mine are just like so weird that it's like, how do I start a conversation with somebody about pyramid schemes? Like, not trying to get them into one, just trying to explain, yeah, like pyramid schemes are like cults and this is interesting, yeah, to me.
Yeah, you're like, I promise I'm not trying to sell you into one. Like,
but it's just yeah, that's why I physically have to surround myself with other autistic people because nobody else would get it and I need to talk to someone about it.
Yeah, yeah, I like how specific they are as well. Like,
they're so specific, so and I can't even work out where it comes from. It's just kind of, I'll be doing so. Another one for a while was LinkedIn. And I think that was just because it's basically around what I've been thinking about or doing. So yeah, like when I was looking for jobs, I was on LinkedIn and then I became fixated on looking for jobs. Like even after I found a job, I still wanted to look for jobs just because I enjoyed it. And same with Rightmove, we were like looking for a flat and then we found a flat and I was just like, oh, but I enjoyed looking at Rightmove, let me just continue doing
that. Yeah, but also you find out a lot about your area by like being on it pretty, you know.
Totally. Like my current fixation is watching the house prices like go down because I think especially with everything going on at the moment there seems to be a little bit of a market crash happening and I like to just look at places around London and be like, oh, that's definitely come down, that wouldn't have been that cheap before, like maybe we'll be able to like afford somewhere if we really really save.
I think you should go into like property like advising. That's I feel like you'd be like, this is the area to be in.
That's the thing, next time we're looking for a place and I have to deal with estate agents again, I'm just gonna be like, look, listen, I know more than you do, so
you know. Yeah, you're like, I know the market.
It's that meme of like I think Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec where he's like, I know more than you do, to the guy who's in the shop, because that's literally, yeah, how I feel like. It's, and it's the most random thing, so it will just pop up. Somebody will be talking about something so obscure and I just realize, oh god, that's been a previous fixation of mine, and suddenly I'm just off on a ramble. And I'm just like, oh, and you know, you can start to tell, you're like, oh gosh, I know I've gone too far, like I know I need to shut up, but you, yeah, physically can't, like when you're in the info dump mode, yes, you just, there's, yeah, no going back.
So are those like your two main ones at the moment?
Yes.
Or have you got, those are the two main ones? Okay.
I think, yeah, they were, Rightmove is definitely a big one. I think I've got more into like hair again. Like I go through different phases where it's basically like, if there's styles that I like, I'm like, okay, I want to do that. And then I fixate on it. So I've like recently been obsessed with learning how to do the perfect blow dry with like the rollers in my hair and everything.
Oh, okay.
So, but it's, yeah, it's definitely more than a normal person would, because it's like, I want to do this like every day until I get it perfect.
Okay.
And then I'll move on to the next thing. So
I literally had that the other day, like for like the past week I've been on TikTok looking at like heatless curls and how people achieve, yes, them with like different implements, like a dressing, oh, gown, gosh, cord or socks or, yes, like a silk thing, and I'm like, how could I achieve this without it just destroying me sensory wise, because obviously you have to like sleep in it,
yeah,
and I've got kind of long hair and I'm like, how could I, and I've just like gone down a massive hole of it.
See, I had, that was definitely a big one when I was like a teenager. I got into the heatless curls and that was one that I definitely was fixated on, because it was, I tried ever, there was one point I think I was doing it with like pencils in my hair.
Oh my god, I've seen that. How comfortable is that?
It is not comfortable. I think the only one that I found that worked for me was doing like four mini buns at the very top of my head, because then, right, okay, you can lie on your side and it's not gonna like really hurt you, but you get some like nice curls in the morning. but okay. That was one that I really was obsessed with. So I kind of revisit general areas sometimes, mm-hmm. and like hair and makeup and that kind of thing. That's definitely mm-hmm. one of them. I think I can feel maybe the beginnings of another makeup phase coming in, which isn't good because makeup and skincare is so expensive to get hyperfixated on, because you're just like, I want to buy every product, and then a few months mm-hmm. later you just don't use any of them.
Yeah I get what you mean, although I do find like things like unboxings on YouTube, you almost get the same kind of satisfaction from, like, if you want to buy something and you can like watch someone and like see the texture of it, especially like I guess with makeup and things like that, like you can almost like try it before you buy.
Yes,
like through influencers.
Yeah, I love the thing is, I know that even if I know at my big age now, I know that even if I bought all of those products, it's not going to hit the same when I'm doing it, so I just need to watch other people do it and it looks flawless on them, and I just need to mm-hmm. get the satisfaction from that.
It's so hard though, like the amount of self-control you need on like social media these days, because like I don't know, I just feel like everything has a link or a shop and you're like,
whoa. I know believe me, I know, because I can definitely I can see like more like makeup get ready with me's coming on, and there's like all the TikTok shop links, and I'm like, don't go into this, because you're just going to buy everything that's on this list, and your bank account does not have the facilities for that.
Yeah. See, we're vulnerable as autistic people to these things as well. Like,
exactly. The impulse buying is no good. Like, we need dopamine mm-hmm. in other areas, because
exactly.
it's a cost of living crisis. We don't have the money to be doing that.
No, you're very right. And like you say, in a few months' time, you'll look back at the stuff and be like, damn it. I needed this.
I have as a permanent reminder, like pretty much a whole collection of makeup that I bought like several years ago in Sephora. I just went mad in, like, we went on holiday and there was a Sephora and I just bought everything that everybody was talking about. So that box is a reminder to me, because I'm like, you never use that, and it's just sitting there. So
mm-hmm. it's a visual.
Yes, like, let's not do that again.
that's a good way of doing it, just like put it in your like line of sight as a reminder. Oh, amazing. I can't believe, I always say this, I can't believe I've spoken to you for an hour. It's gone like really quickly.
I know. I wish we could like go for another hour, because it's nice to just chat.
Yeah. Well, I every so often I like to do like catch-ups with like people that I've spoken to before, because it's always nice to just be like, so how are you doing now? So maybe we could do that in like a year's time or something. Like, it'd be nice to like catch up and see how you're doing.
I think podcasts are made for me, because I just love to chat. So absolutely, I'll come back anytime.
Amazing. I feel like we should mention some of your social media links so people can find you. So do you want to just absolutely promote the hell out of yourself?
Sure. Well, I think so. My TikTok is Ashley Fair, and it's the same username for TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. So that makes it easy for everyone. And my blog is ashleythompson.co.uk. Everyone always asks me where the fair comes from. It's actually my middle name, so but Thompson's way too popular to use for a username, so that's why. But yeah,
it's nice. It's different.
Yeah. Oh, and I have a Goodreads as well, but I don't actually know what that is. I think it's linked in my, I've got like a little link tree on my TikTok. Ooh, okay. So if anyone wants to follow me on Goodreads, that's another hyperfixation at the moment.
Oh, God, I'm obsessed with Goodreads. I love that it gives you the percentage of the way like through the book you are. I need that. I will follow you after this.
Perfect. Lovely.
Amazing. It's so, I get like so like fixated on other people's reviews and like how people like star it and stuff.
Yes.
Or like,
I write detailed reviews, don't worry.
Amazing.
I give updates every time I add a percentage, it gives me like a little dopamine rush, so
I'm with you. Okay, great, we can be Goodreads friends.
Lovely.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and for chatting with me. We will have to catch up again soon.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.